You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. I'm Reginald Atula. Luke Morrow in for John Lopez today, actually. And then, of course, Figgy Fig. And we were just talking about in the question of the day, what 24-hour business would you want in your house? And somebody said, give me a topless shoe shine in my... Is that even a business that people have to begin with? Is that a real thing?
And brother just made that up.
Which, are you about to create that business?
Topless chef that could cook all my food with no shirt.
Which that I always feel, and maybe I'm just squeamish or whatever, I'm always like, if I'm in the kitchen, I don't want clothes on.
I want clothes on.
Like, I don't feel comfortable being in the kitchen.
I'd never forget my dad. He was frying some chicken without a shirt. It was summertime. Man, that grease popped him right in on the side. He thought he got shot.
Wow.
Because the back door was open. He thought he got shot. All he heard was pop. And at that point, I'm like, I would never fry anything or cook anything shirtless. I'll be seeing people on the grill shirtless and all this. I can't do that, man.
I mean, it's hot outside, but we're going to put a t-shirt on.
Yeah, I got to have something on.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's go around the NFL segue somehow from that to this. The NFLPA, I guess, and I saw this per awful announcing. We're expecting the 18-game season to come, right? Like, Roger Goodell has talked about it with a smirk on for so long at this point.
Yeah.
So many different spaces. He's talked about it a lot. It feels damn near inevitable. Also, when you think about the NFL, the team owners and everything, they just continue to run the Players Association in these negotiations. However, it looks like that is not going to happen yet. So according to Mark Maskey of the Washington Post, the NFLPA is, quote, not expected to engage in formal negotiations with the NFL and its team owners on a potential 18-game regular season and other issues related to that until at least early next year. So we're not going to get that, you know, at this point anytime soon. So we push it off just a little bit further, but it feels like we're delaying the inevitable there, which I'm 100% good with. How have you felt just generally about the notion of moving to 18 games?
I don't like it. I didn't really like moving to 17 games, but obviously, you know, then I guess you get used to something. I still don't love it. But I think expansion is inevitable in the NFL, not only in terms of the games. So we're going to get to 18 games. It might happen when they start talking about it next year. And expansion, I think, obviously we're expanding the international games, or you always have these talks about having a team eventually. So I think we're moving in that direction. It might not happen as quick as some people think, you know, with tabling these conversations, but I just feel it's inevitable. We're going to get there. There's going to be 18 games. There's going to be more games internationally. And maybe one day in the not-so-distant future, there'll be a team even located in another part of the world. So I don't love it, but I think it's going to happen, the 18 games.
Yeah, likewise, especially if we do the thing where the NFLPA, in an attempt to maybe try and limit the wear and tear on the bodies of the players, we'll take away a preseason game and then make it a regular season game. I don't think that that's actually a fair trade, and I think that you don't allow these teams to be properly prepared for the season, so the first couple of weeks are of lesser quality, and then two, I think what you talked about, just generally watering down the regular season. But prior to this point where we get this news, there was expectation that maybe that conversation could happen this year, this summer. That's not going to be the case. It'll be pushed off at least to early next year. So we feel comfortable about that being pushed a little bit further.
Yeah,
it's going to happen.
I was like, maybe the PA might find a little bit of backbone or some level of strength that we did not anticipate them being able to have and continue to push it off. But I don't imagine.
Yeah, they're going to take away a preseason game, put a regular season game there pretty much.
And it should lead to more money, of course, and then you can talk about, you could try to sell the players on, it'll trickle down into your pockets, and everyone has a price, so, maybe the bargaining chip, you get a second buy in there for players, quote-unquote player safety.
You would have to.
That's probably.
You'd have to have that give.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they didn't do that.
Which, to be honest, I think that is an under-discussed part of it. I think it's necessary to try and help teams out make it through. I think that'll make our windows of the TV schedules less good. Like during the regular season, once we start getting to those buys, and then especially when we have those weeks where, oh, there's two Monday night games, or there's two Thursday night games, or here's the Saturday game, you remember you get to that Sunday afternoon slate and you're like, why are none of these games good? I think we'll have more of those as we start filtering in more of the double buy situation.
I'm with you 100%. Too much of a good thing can become a bad thing. You might think you want a strip club in your house 24 hours a day.
Disagree. And then I don't like
eventually the, it's like, I'm kind of tired of the strip club. This is
not
this
never.
Is gross. We got gonorrhea on the floors around here.
Whoa!
So
whoa!
Same thing with football where We all think we want more football, but then they give you spring football and they give you the CFL in the summer. No one's watching anyways. I know the NFL is a different animal, but one of the perks of the NFL, as you mentioned earlier, is just kind of the it used to be just once a week or twice a week, and there's only 16 games. And when you keep adding on to it, I think it does water down.
I'm curious to see when are we going to see like a dip in too much football like this, because they keep adding on to it because there's no dip in it. So I'm just wondering, when is it where we be like, man, this is too much, or this ain't working out right?
I mean, we've been, and I say we, just like the larger royal we, I think have been looking at this and saying, okay, when does that happen for a long time? I always like referencing the Mark Cuban quote of like, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. Yeah. We have not reached hog status anywhere recently, and I don't know that we get it anytime soon. Like, I'm starting to get to a point where I'm like, there might not be a cliff. And that seems absurd, because there's got to be at some point where you just oversaturate. But especially when you look at the way that No other live programming does what sports does, and no other sport does what the NFL does. And because of that unique dichotomy, I just don't know that we're going to hit that spot anytime soon.
Yeah,
it's true. I don't know if it'll be soon. I think the breaking point could be when they ask too much of you. And so, like, right now, you need like six different streaming services to watch the games, and it costs you money just to watch the games. And then, you know, they put more games on more holidays, so now that is asking more of you to either miss a game or, you know, to have to watch your team on Christmas when you're supposed to be the fan. So I think that becomes the breaking point at a certain point. It might not happen for, another decade or two, but when they require too much of the fans, I think that's when you start to get a little turned
off. And I thought we was getting that recently a little bit, but it seemed like the numbers don't say that. The numbers still show that it's still sky high. And people are buying these streams just to watch these games and stuff.
Yeah, and the NFL has done, at least they've put in certain rules where they've been able to mitigate this. As I'm sure, they're like, that's the intention, right, is to make sure to mitigate this. They don't want to see the fall of their sport and their dominance. But the idea that there's still the primary money TV-wise is still, you know, national TV broadcasters, and they have the rule that in the local market that it still has to be broadcast on that you know, local TV, as opposed to even if it's on Netflix or Peacock or what have you. I think that if we ever get to a point where the biggest money dollars are actually with the streamers rather than Fox or or ABC or CBS, if we ever get to that point, I think that that's when, we might be pushing it. Because as Luke, you're talking about, if people are having to, like, you have to have the your subscription to Apple TV or what have you in order to watch just the baseline of games, then we get to a really bad place.
Do you think it get to a point where they add an extra day in the week for like a game? Because right now you got Monday night, Thursday night, Sunday.
Yes.
So do you think they're going to try to add like a Wednesday game, a random ass Wednesday game, or a Friday game?
I don't think Wednesday
like
would be it, because Wednesday would push the balance way too far. Like, we already talked about the short turnaround on Thursday. I think the day to look out for is Friday. Maybe it's Saturday more so, because I don't know if we talked about it before. There is like a long-term old rule that makes it so that in the fall, Fridays and Saturdays are protected because of college football. Not to get too political, but I do think that as you have more and more like politicians in the highest offices in this land that are maybe more amenable to some level of like lobbying or what have you, the NFL might get to a place where, as they have come for the NBA's corners, like Champ Slice on a YouTube page mentioning that Christmas has basically been deboed by the NFL. What happens if they say, this is the place where we can make more money by trying to get Fridays and or Saturdays, if we can get Congress to, you know, change that particular law, allow the NFL to Saturdays and Sundays, and now we get another day, we can make more money and sell packages, that could be a space as well.
Yeah, there is.
It's a lot of football, man.
That's going to be the 24/7 thing. It's the Sports Broadcasting Act of 1961. So even Friday nights after 6 p.m., you can't have NFL games broadcast to protect high school football. But that doesn't kick in until like the middle of September, which is why they were able to do the Friday game. What was that last year in Brazil? Because that was early September. So anyways, it's a whole thing. So there are some rules, but there's always workarounds. They've gotten more Saturday games at the end of the year the NFL has. So
once the college football
season exactly. So whenever they do have those windows, they take advantage. So I'm sure it's their dream to have games on almost every day at some point eventually.
I bet so. Especially if it's like, hey, we'll find a way to figure out. We'll give you a bye week before so that you won't have to worry about the off days or what have you. But I found that to be interesting. Some other things around the NFL. One of the big teams in the AFC, one of the teams that I actually personally am very fond of, the Baltimore Ravens, Lamar Jackson, quarterback of it, He admitted that he still has one major flaw in his game that he's working on. When he was having an interview with Kevin Hart in what the show that he has that is called Cold as Balls, you know, the premise
sitting
of
in
this,
the ice.
They just sit in that cold tub, which God bless all these people that do that. That is I feel like that would be harder for me than hot ones as an interview kind of situation. Just sitting in the cold tub. And I know that you regulate to it, but I just don't like, I much rather take heat than cold just generally. So the cold tub is not really my forte, but I imagine the athlete, you're fine. You do this a lot.
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe I would rather risk it on like hot ones than in the cold tub. Props to him. I couldn't do it if I'm Kevin Hart.
No, I mean, he does that all the damn time. But in this, in the interview, he was talking about what the most difficult adjustment has been to playing in the NFL, and he didn't hesitate. His answer was, just being a leader. I'm going to say being a leader, which is echoed by one of his coaches, T. Martin, who is the quarterback's coach, was talking about his vocal leadership. But he also was talking about in a way where that's a level of growth. Vocal leadership, Martin said, when he first got there in 2021, he was the leader by play, by action. There was a lot of on his plate, and he was relatively quiet. But since he's been, you know, getting better at that or trying to get better. And the thing I thought about is, if Lamar Jackson has not been a leader to this point, and he's been that damn good, what happens if he has that level of command? Because it seems like his teammates love him.
Yeah.
What happens if he has that level of, like, vocal leadership? Where does that take that team to?
Yeah, maybe the next level. I'm surprised to hear that. I did not hear that previously. I'm hearing it for the first time in real time. And yeah, I was surprised by that. I think there's multiple ways you can lead, though, which was kind of alluded to there in that quote. And, you know, I know there's a lot of guys that aren't necessarily those extroverts or very vocal and instead lead on the field and in the performance. I am curious that if he were to add that tool to the repertoire, if that makes a big difference in the Ravens trying to get over the hump. And finally, because when you look at the Ravens and the faults, I wouldn't point to leadership as being the issue.
No.
You know, when you look at like the failures in the playoffs or even the Ravens, the way the organization runs, I would actually consider them to be just in general, not just the quarterback position, but in general to be one of the better led organizations because of the head coach and the culture and then Lamar Jackson and his playing styles.
I will say, though, their playoff exits of late have been kind of stepping on your toes and falling off at the very end. And I do wonder if your quarterback doing like the Tim Tebow, like, hey, y'all get on my back. We need to get beyond this.
True.
Maybe that's just like sports guy doing sports cliche.
Right.
But I do wonder if maybe that changes and, you know, Zay Flowers doesn't drop a couple on the goal line and Mark Andrews doesn't kind of sell in that game. Yeah, I do wonder if that shifts it at all. By the way, do you know how old Lamar Jackson is as a quarterback? It feels like he's played a long time, right?
Yeah, it does. 25.
28 years old.
Okay.
Along with Joe Burrow. But I saw this CBS Sports put together, like, you know, a nice chart of the ages of quarterbacks in this league. And I think the thing for me that's interesting is the youngest quarterback that is projected to start in week one is J.J. McCarthy of the Vikings.
Yes.
After that, at age 23, you have Caleb Williams, Cam Ward, you have Drake May. And then you also have C.J. Stroud, who is 23 years of age. And I think you know the juxtaposition that I'm now going to make. How crazy is it that at 5 years younger than Lamar Jackson, that dude is already like full vocal leader?
It's true. Yeah, I think if you even break it down by month, or maybe that was in order of it too, like you just laid out, he is like the third or fourth youngest quarterback still, like when you compare the 23.
Oh, yeah, I just did it for effect. I put him last for effect. I don't know where he is on the
list. But yeah, if you break it down by like the birth date, he's still like third or fourth youngest starting quarterback in the league, which is crazy. And that goes to kind of what Peyton Manning pointed out at Fanatics Fest last weekend, where he's like, man, when I was CJ's age, I was struggling just to win a playoff game or make it to the playoffs.
That is
and
true.
He's already won a playoff game. And I think you have to have, two playoff games, right? One playoff game each of his first 2 years. And so I think you have to have some sort of level of leadership to be able to achieve that at such a young age. So it's a good perspective that I think we lose track of just remembering. We're being reminded of how young he truly is, not only in his NFL career, but just age-wise when you compare him to his peers in the league.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, that was a very interesting thing that I saw, like, in seeing Lamar Jackson still talking about becoming a leader. Obviously, an incredible football player, incredible athlete, great thrower of the football, all those things. I feel great about his game. But then I look back and I go, C.J. Stroud has a lot of those types of things, and the leadership is the part that I think you lead with that. You lead with the intangible portions of his of his game. And maybe even, like, the people that have taken a knock on him for being maybe too sentimental and emotional, I think that that's a side that I'd rather go to as he also develops into, you know, one of the better quarterbacks in this league. Right now, before we go around the NFL, I don't know if you saw this. The NFL is doing their top 100 players of 2025, but they're doing it, they're releasing it in kind of a different way, where they're releasing like these little vignettes, like 3 to 5 minute videos on each answer. And they're doing it like two players at a time. So we have a top 100, but as of right now, I think we're 3 days in. So we have 6 of the top 100. We have 100 to 95. And so just to let you know, the people that we have up here, Leonard Williams, defensive lineman, or actually that was 99. Ladd McConkey, or Ladarius McConkey, as some people have taken to calling him because of the way he plays. He is the 100th best player in the NFL. Defensive lineman Leonard Williams of the Seahawks is 99. Aaron Jones, running back for the Vikings, 98. Drake London, 97, the wide receiver for the Falcons. 96 is Levante David, the linebacker for the Bucks. And then 95 is Josh Sweat, the outside linebacker, who is now with the Arizona Cardinals. But first and foremost, what the hell is this rollout? Like, are we just supposed to wait on this? Because you just have to wait until they announce all of them. We're not going to follow this all the way along, are we?
No, right. It's typical NFL that it takes 2 months to do this. But I think... I was going to say, I think it's almost, you remove some of the drama if you did it the other way, but I think you almost have to go 1 to 100 so you can see, like, oh, the 73rd guy? No, he should probably be ahead of these other guys. Like,
yes.
It's hard to look at it now and be like, oh, he's ranked 95th? Okay, well.
What does that mean?
Right, I gotta wait to see the other 94 names you're putting ahead of him.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like, there's a lot of these lists that go, like, let's say it's a top 10, 10 to 1, when in all reality, the fun is not who's number one and number two. Those ones feel evident. Like if we're talking who's the best quarterbacks and you go last day and there's only Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen left.
Right.
Who's the best? It's like, all right, we kind of know how this goes. It's more fun when you go last day, who's 9 and who's 10. So yeah, this really should go the other way.
Yeah, I know. I think they believe the drama is waiting to see who are they going to put number one. Let me check back in 6 weeks. But it's hard to have the context of this list. Like you mentioned those names right now, it means nothing to me. Cause I'd have to see who they ranked ahead of them. That's a bigger talking point to me.
All right. I will circle back around. Well, tomorrow and let you know the next dump plan.
Yeah.
We'll circle back around in a few weeks once they actually give us
Siri, set an alarm for 6 weeks from now.
We'll see that. Sorry. Somebody said talking so fast to understand. Sorry. I'm just trying to get through the names there, but regardless, you're around. That's around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, big deal, big trade that happened in the NFL. We talked about the last couple of days, but it kind of got Luke thinking about something with the Texans. Does this particular position group, is this not situated for the run that with the Super Bowl run that we're hoping the Texans make? We'll tell you what I mean next. Okay, I see what you're doing here, Fig. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. I'm Reginald Atatula alongside Luke Morrow in for the OG John Lopez today. Obviously, as I mentioned, Figgy Fig on the ones and twos, as he always is. Hope your Wednesday is going pretty well. Your Thursday, I hope that it will go really well as we will be on the air, myself and Ron Hughley, for 12 hours straight, 6A to 6P, not just to hear ourselves talk, but to try and raise money for a very important cause, the Houston Food Bank, who is, you know, obviously serving over a million people in the area, and they're doing so with less money this year than ever before. And so what we can do as a Sports Radio 610 family is to come together and try and get some money for them folks. So tune in to the Reggie
Ron. I'm excited about this, man.
I am as well.
I think I'm more, I ain't going to say more excited because obviously I'm more excited about raising this money. But I'm excited to hear you and Ron do a show together, man.
It'll be interesting. But it won't just be us. A lot of your Sports Radio 610 personalities jumping in with us. Luke, you're going to be hopping in with us right about this time, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right,
12
noon?
To 2? Yeah. That's the plan. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It really is a great cause. I've been involved with Radiothons in the past, just kind of involved, just kind of like tomorrow, where I'll just be hanging out. And I'm always appreciative to be able to be involved because I think it's a really great thing and a cool thing that you guys are doing tomorrow. So
I mean, it's not us doing it. It's the Sports Radio 610 community. It's really everyone doing it. So if y'all could pitch in, we could, you know, lift up our community in that way. All right. I did want to circle back around to this, though, because the Steelers made a trade, and did you also, like, when you first see it, think about it in the way that myself and Chris did, where we're just like, huh, that's interesting. We don't often see like player for player trades in this particular way, especially of this caliber. We didn't acknowledge it immediately in that, but that's three all pros that are kind of going in that trade. That was really interesting. But Jonnu Smith and Jalen Ramsey. I kept wanting to say Micah Fitzpatrick, who is coming back to Miami in that trade. But those three guys are traded in that. But the Jonnu Smith portion of it caught your attention for a reason, didn't it?
Yeah, because the Steelers, you know, they're going to try to go with like a double tight end thing now. And you, when they look at that division and who they're trying to catch up to with the Ravens, most likely, and you have Mark Andrews there. And it just brought me back to, you guys might have talked about it on
Isaiah
the show.
Isaiah Likely disrespect.
Oh, that's true. I forgot. Yeah, I forgot my guy, Isaiah Likely. Yeah, double tight ends there. Two talented tight ends. Steelers trying to duplicate it. And it just brought me back to the comments that maybe you guys had discussed at the time, but George Kittle about a week or two ago, just talking about the importance of the tight end position. And if you go back and you look at recent Super Bowl winners of the past, whatever, say 10, 15 years, they all typically have a really good tight end. Obviously, Gronk, and they tried for a period there with Gronk and Aaron Hernandez in New England with success until the off-the-field stuff. And then you have, obviously, Kelce, and you have Kittle himself in San Francisco, and even Dallas Goddard's pretty solid. And it did get me thinking of, you know, maybe the undervaluing or underrating of the tight end position these days and how these guys, like Kellen Winslow was a freak back in the day, but these guys, especially now, these the body types and the tough matchup they provide and the versatility and all this sort of stuff. And it just got me thinking of the importance of the tight end position. You look at some of the best teams, the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bills are the teams you're looking up at in the AFC, and they all are good at the tight end position. In the NFC, even Dallas Goddard and Laporta in Detroit. And look, the Vikings didn't do much in the playoffs last year, but they won a bunch of games, and they invested in TJ Hockenson. Mm-hmm. And so all of this is to say that it just got me thinking, for all the talk for the Texans of the wide receivers they brought in and the running back room they've developed, are we still undervaluing that tight end position? I know a lot was made last year about Dalton Schultz not being good enough and the hope that these guys are going to improve and Nick Caley's tight end background. But just when you look at the top teams in the NFL, they're all really good at the tight end position. Are the Texans there despite all the other weapons they have?
I think it's a great question. It's one that we've kind of pondered on in some ways, but I don't know that we got to it explicitly in this when you talk about this as prerequisite to Super Bowl contention. And I think the reason why is, we know that the leagues kind of operate in cycles, like many things. Fashion mm-hmm. operates in cycles. You know, big pants are out, and then they're, you know, skinnier in, and then we go back big again, right? These things operate in cycles, and similarly, football. And we could think about reasons why, right? Big bruising running teams are big bruising. We get big bruising defensive players in order to try and physically handle that. Offense zigs in order to get that. They get smaller, faster players, which I think we've largely been in recently. So defenses end up in smaller, faster players, smaller, faster packages where, you know, nickel is kind of your base package now as opposed to like your base 3-4 or 4-3 like it had previously been. And now you have more smaller guys on the field. And I think that that's where you get the mismatch of why the tight ends matter even more so now.
Yeah.
Because there is a significant built-in mismatch of having a guy who is, you know, anywhere near offensive lineman size, but also operates like a wide receiver and gets downfield and is usually matching up against either a guy who is slower than him in like a linebacker or maybe a bigger safety or smaller than him in a smaller safety or a cornerback. And so that mismatch situation is usually nice. And I think that's where team like Kittle and, you know, various guys that you mentioned are able to get an advantage. I think the question ultimately we're asking is, are you getting that advantage with the Texans? And I mean, if we're just going off of what we've seen last year and trying to, you know, just use that and push that onto this year, the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
The answer would flat out be no. Even as like, even if we take away the blocking, which I know with Dalton Schultz was problematic, I think I could argue that some of that was the positions that he's put in and not understanding who his personnel was. Bobby Slowick, Cade Stover was still young and developing. I think that even with that, you know, Dalton Schultz as a receiver was not good enough for what we're talking about here. However, I do think that there is room to be maximized within that. When it comes to Dalton Schultz, but maybe more so with Cade Stover, a guy who was developing. And it did not feel like Cade Stover got as much opportunity as a pass catcher, where if you're looking for a guy who's a little more all-encompassing, that can give you the blocking, but then also give you the route running and give you the ability to be a pass catcher, I imagine Cade Stover fits that a little better, and he might be the best chance to get into that place if you see the progression in his, I guess, opportunities, talk less of his ability to get out in routes and get the ball and try and maybe make some hay with the mismatches that we're talking about.
And do you think that they have the capability to not only be better than what we got last year, but to, I'm not saying Dalton Schultz has to turn into Travis Kelce or George Kittle.
Glad you're not.
Yes.
I'd be hard pressed to give you an answer after that.
I'm not that delusional. But do you think that simply by bringing in, say, a Nick Caley with a tight end background or by changing the offense a little bit, can they get to a point at that tight end position? Can they hit a ceiling high enough where you can compete with those other, you know, top offenses or the other top teams in the AFC that seem to have these really good tight end rooms?
I think so, because what have we been talking about all this time is just like changing the offense and changing the situation of it, particularly with getting better protection, gives you an opportunity to do much more, get way further, whether it's just distributing the ball to your guys, being able to get this out there. But I keep leaning on one of the things that Nick Caley has preached about what his tenure is going to be. One of the few things that we've gotten that we can absolutely hold on to is the idea that it seems like a basic core tenet of what he does is, you know, having his players understand the, you know, the intent of the play and making sure that he puts guys in the best chance for them to succeed, basically tailors what they're going to do to their strengths. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is wildly important in any game, particularly in modern football. But I think also for these tight ends, right, like getting these guys into spaces where, you know, whatever talents that they have, especially if they're not going to be like the all around tight end that just makes everything easy. If they're going to be a guy that, hey, you might need to tailor exactly the ways in which you get them the football in order for them to be the most successful, go ahead and do that, right? Understand that Dalton Schultz is not a pass blocker, especially not an inline blocker. Maybe you could utilize him in certain situations to, you know, maybe like a crack block or, you know, maybe a particular wham or something where he is able to get his, you know, have a little bit of momentum moving forward and to do that. But if you have him in the right spaces, and then you can get him into the seam in order to do something, get him into maybe like the, you know, an out route underneath or like in a high low type situation to get him the football where he's able to utilize his hands and maybe not necessarily have to be as much of a yards after catch guy. I think that some of those instances, you put him in those circumstances to be able to succeed, and then also just if you have protection, you'll be able to get them the ball more. But I think that those are the places where you can make those guys more dangerous because they do have the size. I wouldn't necessarily say that they have a ton of speed, those guys that you're talking about in your current tight end room, but I guess that's where Brevin Jordan comes in. It would just be utilizing those guys, understanding what their strengths is, have them in at the right times to try and attack defenses in the ways that you should. I think that gives you an opportunity to at least get the production of those elite type tight ends with the guys that you have.
I think the tight ends could be huge because obviously usually tight ends are like the safety valve for a quarterback, and I know Seth has talked about it before, but you can look at the difference in the numbers of when Stephon Diggs was on the field and when Diggs was off the field last year for Stroud, because you had that veteran wide receiver that you could trust in tough times. And when you look at this wide receiving group, obviously Nico Collins and then Christian Kirk's a veteran, but you know there's still questions about those rookie receivers behind them. So I think if you could have that connection with the tight end where you can trust them, especially when you're under duress, you know, that's when they can really bail you out and make big plays as opposed to having to try to rely on a couple of rookies at times in big situations.
That's a great point. Like scramble drill type situations, hopefully not too much scramble drill, but in instances where you just need to find someone where it's not the play, it's not the design, it's just we see each other, we know each other, and we can make this play. Nico clearly has that connection, but you're right. There's not as much of that you have guaranteed. But what's funny is CJ talks about Dalton Schultz like that's his dude. And it didn't seem like that showed up on the field. It'd be great if that connection, whatever it actually is, that seems to be all off the field, shows up stronger on the field. Because I think you're right. That would be a huge weapon just in having a guy that you know, me and you are on the same page and we can get the football to each other in moments where, you know, you might need to make a little something out of nothing, which, of course, as we know, is the thing that changes from a solid to good quarterback to just a great, maybe elite quarterback.
Yeah, and knock on wood, hopefully it's not an issue, but there might be plenty of times this year where Stroud's under duress, has to make something happen, and that's where a guy like Schultz can really come into play. So, yeah, it just put that in perspective to me with the Janu trade of like, oh, now the Steelers are going with this double tight end look and trying to catch up to the Ravens. You look around the league and you realize there's some good tight ends on these good teams and just hoping the Texans can get good enough production at that position where it's not a, for lack of a better term, like a black hole of the offense.
All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping, including the Browns' new stadium. We're getting a little bit of ideas of what it looked like, and is there any way that the Texans might be taking some ideas on, I don't know, whether the renovations to NRG or possibly new stadium? We'll talk about that more next. All right, let's get into what's popping here in the loop on Sports Radio 610 on this Wednesday. And, of course, I begin as Luke walks in with a slider that he has just set down on the table. Sorry, press pause. Are you one of those people that just push your food on a table with no plate?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Unbelievable. I I can't. No. You know all the people that be in here with their hands. You don't think they do you think they wash their hands when they go to the restroom?
Hey, I put it on a paper. Hey, a paper.
Wait till you find out what happened on that table.
Actually, I very much live by the mantra of don't ask questions that you don't want answers to, and I don't want that answer at all.
I do remember being in here in the fall, and didn't Seth like leave a pair of underwear around
that
somewhere?
That did happen. I do believe that they were clean draws, but they were draws nonetheless. Okay, and so, thanks for that reminder. Yep.
It's on a piece of paper. We're good.
And when he says a piece, he's not talking about, which is funny. Sorry, I'll get there. He's not talking about a napkin. He's
an actual piece
like
of paper.
Like a loose leaf of piece of paper that has been printed upon, mind you. So it went through a printer, whatever that's worth.
That's
but
fair.
Why do we view, at least for me, and maybe you view it differently, why do we view like individual sheets of paper differently as a napkin? Because, I mean, they're kind of similar. Are they not? Or am I just bugging?
They related. They come from the same place.
You know, they're cousins. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so.
In terms of like
cleanliness. I would set like a slice of pizza on a napkin in a way that I wouldn't on some printer paper.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know. Anyways. Yeah. Hunter Brown Day. Happy Hunter Brown Day to you, as he will be your starter tonight in Denver versus a 6.14 ERA having Austin Gomber out there. Whatever happens there, I don't know, because last night, and to be fair, Colton Gordon is not Hunter Brown, so I don't want to do that by any means, but Colton Gordon had a little bit of a rough go of it yesterday, when it came to the game versus the 19-win Colorado Rockies. Now, he didn't lose the game, but he also didn't have an opportunity to possibly get the win in this game, and he only goes four and two-thirds, 9 hits off him with 4 of the 4 earned runs on him, including a homer as well. It's a tough thing going out there and pitching in Colorado, which I imagine is a decent a part of this, which is why yesterday, and I know y'all was getting on me for it, yesterday I was a little bit concerned about having Hunter Brown out here, not because I don't think he can do well. I just really like the idea of saying league-leading ERA haver, Hunter Brown, in Colorado is a place that can really hurt your ERA.
That's true. And then also, the other part of that conversation is because he's pitching in Colorado, you don't get to throw him against the Dodgers this weekend. And look, I know this is the regular season. It's July, so you don't really alter your rotation for a game in the middle of the season. But still, you know, if you got one start from Hunter Brown this week, obviously in a vacuum, you'd prefer it to be against the Dodgers than against the 19-win Rockies. So it's the two. But at least, you know, like Paul Skenes got knocked around 2 starts ago. Max Fried allowed 4 runs yesterday, which I think might have been a season high. So there's a little breathing room, I guess, there with Hunter and the guys behind him, but we'll see how he does.
I'm very intrigued. Obviously, Hunter Brown is always a must-watch anyways. I've always heard, and maybe this is probably just more so with the guys that have to pitch consistently as a Rocky, so you have to have 2 arsenals just because balls don't break in the same way at that altitude at that stadium. And I always wonder, does that also factor in for visiting pitchers? This is just one time. Do I have to at all consider this, or do I just throw and hope that things kind of break in somewhat close to the way that I want to get to hit my spots?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it just comes down to the person and the philosophy. It's almost like the football coach that no matter the matchup, you're just going to do what you do and try to run the football no matter what. And I think some teams might view it the same, like, hey, we're just going to, you're a particular type of pitcher, you're going to pitch that same way, where others, you're more matchup-based, where you look at a certain lineup and think like, oh, we got to throw more changeups against these guys tonight. So I think it's more the philosophy of the coaching staff or the organization or maybe even the pitcher himself. I think it's a good point. I think some guys go in there, try to do the same thing, maybe even egotistically think that they can, you know, it doesn't matter about Coors Field, they'll be fine. And then I think there's certain guys that adjust every outing based off of the lineup they're facing or the team they're facing. So we'll see what sort of approach maybe Hunter takes tonight, but yeah, it is a good test on paper in that regard. Of Hunter Brown's been this top 2 pitcher statistically in the past 12 months, and even though it's the lowly Rockies, you know, see how his stuff translates to Coors Field.
Right. It's not like he's not playing the Rockies in my mind. He's playing altitude today, and I kind of am just interested in seeing what the actual pitches look like in that space. Again, shout out to the bullpen, who always deserve their credit. As if I am Jose Altuve hitting a home run, rounding second and pointing to the bullpen. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the fellas who played fireman. You had Oker come in for a third of an inning, and then Sousa, Brian King, Brian Abreu hold down the innings up until Josh Hader comes in. He does allow an earned run, but he does ultimately get yet another save, as he always does seemingly this season. So that solidified win number 1. They go for the win on the series again with Hunter Brown on the mound. for your Astros. Some other things that are popping. I mentioned the Browns and their new iteration of Huntington Bank Stadium, which is something that they now have secured funding for. Ain't that right, our Cleveland correspondent, Figgy Fig?
Yeah, so the governor signed off on it.
So, yeah, the governor of Ohio has signed off on it. So they are set to get themselves a new stadium. And the design is kind of cool, I'm going to be completely honest. It looks kind of like a field house. It's like a modern field house art kind of art situation. But it has a few things built into design that I'm interested. If you, Luke, and if you listeners would be intrigued to see maybe the Texans try and implement some degree in whether they have a remodel of NRG Stadium or even a build of a new stadium, which is they have the closest first and last row seats in the NFL, meaning it seems like they're really building this thing almost like a lot more of these stadiums where they contain the sound a little bit better and they pull people a little bit closer to field level from wherever they're sitting. The largest concourse in the NFL, which I imagine makes ambulating around the stadium a lot easier. And this feels like this leans into the Intuit Dome, what the Clippers did, the largest fan wall in the NFL. So like, just kind of a sheer, amount of seats that creates kind of just a wall of fans that I imagine would create a level of sound that could really get out. Now, I imagine that is going to be that maybe concourse possibly would be things that would be a little tough to put into a renovation of NRG. But all of those are really interesting. Which of those feels like they're the strongest addition to a stadium for you?
For me, selfishly, I think it's concourse. Concourse is always a big thing. You go to these old stadiums. I grew up going to Fenway Park, and there's just no room to move. People are in the line at the concession stand or the bathroom. Concourse is huge. I think that's something these new stadiums have done a really good job of with these big concourses. The first one you mentioned, it sounds good, but I'd have to see how they lay it out, because like they tried to do that at Barclays Center, and part of it was because they're putting an arena in the middle of a city. But they had very steep, or they still have very steep upper decks.
Right.
So it allows you to feel like you're more on the court. But it is dangerous walking up and down those aisles because it's so steep. So that would be my concern there, to see how exactly they design or implement that. But I'm a big concourse guy. I think that's a big part of the stadium. You have to be able to move around freely and make it easy to get in and out of and get to the concession stand. So I'm all for bigger concourses.
Yeah. What about you, Fig? Because I know that you've been kind of watching this, especially, and I know that we were talking about it a little bit last week. Before Lopez went on vacation, he was like, man, this is making him feel antsy and, want to see what the resolution would be with the Texans and whatever stadium things happen for them. How did you see it?
I think it's unwell needed because I know the big thing that got everybody arguing with each other is they want the stadium on the lake, like downtown on the lake. And this one is not on the lake. It's not even in the city of Cleveland. Uh-huh. It's like in the suburb right by the airport pretty much. And I think this is fine, man. You got some of the people talk about, oh, they shouldn't have a dome. It's supposed to be football weather, AFC North. Give a damn about that, man. They've been playing in the AFC North for a long time, and they haven't done anything. They need to try something else, man. Maybe try playing inside and maybe get an advantage from there, man. Playing on – dog, have y'all been on – where that lake is and that lake effect, and just that's why all these quarterbacks suck too, man. Like you can't throw a ball in that near Lake Erie like that, man. In December and January and all that.
That is a good point though,
because what quarterback want to go there? Hell, Deshaun Watson didn't even want to go there until they paid him a little extra.
A lot extra is what we have to say there. Like, no, that's a great point.
A quarterback have no advantage in there, especially if you playing for the Browns.
No, that is a great point. I think about it often, the way that the NFL has the regular season in this fall time and then the most important games in this entirely different kind of weather that seems like it would move away from the way that the games are typically played. Like a high passing game, in theory, would not work out nearly as well in the weather that you have. So it feels like you would want to move towards more opportunities to control the environment, especially also as the Club World Cup, if anybody's interested in that, that's been going on here stateside with various soccer teams. And soccer people have been commenting on there was, weather delays because of, lightning as we're used to it, but maybe not as much used to it in, other parts of the world. And you can get rid of that, as we've seen, by having a roof, like having a situation where taking away the opportunity for weather to not just affect the game, but to, affect the times and ways that you play the game, especially as more and more money is here on these games for the TV and the timeliness. I think that that's also another reason why I'm very much in a place where cover all, dome all these things up. Let's play football.
Yeah, I know. You would think the teams who want to do that for to be able to have more events. I know for, I've always said for baseball, every baseball stadium should have at least a retractable roof. Get rid of these rain delays and postponements and all that sort of stuff. But I will say for football, and this is just off the top of my head, you could probably go through the list and prove me wrong. It just feels like the outdoor teams, especially in the elements, are the ones that are more successful come playoff time because they're prepared for those situations. And we always see the Dolphins have to go somewhere cold here in recent years and embarrass themselves.
They are an outdoor team, though.
They are, but warm climate, I guess, is my point. Yeah, yeah. So either indoor or outdoor.
I thought they play inside. The Dolphins?
The Dolphins.
Hard Rock Stadium has, it has
like a cabana type of thing, right?
I forget what they're called. They're like kind of, cantilever is the word that's coming to mind, but it's not the right. But they kind of have overhangs over the seats. But okay. The actual stadium is still exposed to the elements.
Okay.
But anyways, like outdoor in colder elements, I guess, is my point. And so if the Browns ever get to that point, and then because you have to go through Kansas City or Buffalo right now, or even Baltimore where it's
put domes on all of them, yeah. I say.
Yeah. And honestly, even Kansas City, Baltimore, and hell, you could even say Pittsburgh too.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, I mean, it's still cold. Don't get me wrong. It's still cold. You get the rain, snow, and all that stuff.
All right, lake effect.
But that lake effect, man, that wind. Man, did you see the passes people be throwing, man? That wind just take it away, man.
I will say.
Like, what quarterback want to play in that?
We don't give enough credit to how chilling wind can be.
Oh, it's the worst.
As a person who lived in Kansas for a single solitary year, I was like, oh, I didn't realize that this is what that does.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize that, oh, this will cut you to the bone. Yeah. Even though it's like, oh, it's not that cold out. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
It's the cold version of like humidity.
Yes.
You can deal with a certain cold temperature. It's not that bad. It's the wind that gets you. And same vice versa in the summer where you could deal with 90 degrees if it's not humid, but it's the humidity that gets
don't
you.
Don't let J-Lo hear that I said that, by the way. It's him and his Luke. I don't know if you were listening at this point. So when Ron went to, what was it, Aruba?
Yeah.
The first thing that John Lopez says when finding out that somebody has gone to Aruba was, it's real windy there. Like, how is that the first thing on your mind?
Yeah.
Like, not no beaches, not no vistas, not no drinks of alcoholic fashions. No, he's like the wind.
He said, it's a little windy there.
It's a little windy.
Yeah. That's why I never go to Chicago. It's too windy.
Too windy. One more thing. I forgot to mention this when it came to the Astros. They're recalling infielder Shea Whitcomb to the team instead of Jeremy Peña, who obviously went to the 10-day IL retroactive to Saturday, which was the 28th. But that gives you an idea. Like that's how they're probably going to address this, and it'll be more Altuve at second, according to Joe Espada. That is what's going to happen here. So I imagine Whitcomb has an opportunity. I made him Cam Whitmore. Whitcomb has an opportunity to maybe play some third base, possibly some corner infield at times, as he's recalled from Sugar Land.
I feel bad for him at this point for 4A Shea. He just can't. All these other guys, there was one game like a week or two ago. I forget the game exactly. They scored a bunch of runs, and he was the only guy that was like, he just can't buy a hit. He doesn't start a lot. He comes in off the bench. He gets one at bat. But the guy's 0-for-9 right now with 5 strikeouts this year and, you know, is hitting
at the major league. I was about to say, has he only gotten like 7 at-bats? And he's had a nice stint of being up. They just don't give him opportunity to get at-bats.
So that makes it harder, but I just feel bad. He can't buy a hit. 180 career hitter, just hasn't been able to. He hasn't been given the full opportunity specifically this year, but hasn't been able to put it together yet.
Yeah. All right. So maybe he'll get an opportunity in this stretch, especially now that we know not only Jeremy Peña missing a little bit of time, but Yordan shut down. So there's a little bit more time for that as well. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, I continued my rewatch of the 2024 Texans season. This time, week 6 at New England, if you remember. A lot of points in that one for the Texans. Let's break that one down next.